Beer, Cheese, and Murder is a true crime podcast about Wisconsin from Wisconsin. Due to the nature of true crime, this podcast contains explicit and graphic content which may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Beer, Cheese, and Murder. I'm Erica, and joining me today are...
Bonnie,
Dina,
Jill,
and Terry.
All right, what do you got, Jill?
All right, so I picked up Hello Wine, and it is from the Door Peninsula Winery, and I know we've kind of... gotten a lot of wines from this place, but this one's a little different because it's a semi-sweet apple wine spiced with cinnamon and nutmeg, and it is best enjoyed when served warm.
Oh, so,
yes. And that's what I like about it, is that usually a mulled wine is usually a red one, but right. This is actually a white, and it's just lighter and yummy when it's warm. And I highly recommend it. It is 11% ABV. And then if I could just read what it says on the back, the legend of Hello Wine. In 1665, Reginald W. Hello brought his unique blend of fall harvest apples and mulled spices to ferment in the crisp Door County air. He dubbed his creation Hello Wine, ... then mysteriously disappeared. Erica, maybe we could do a story on this guy.
Just right.
Disappeared with his wine.
Right. ... Okay. And then it says 334 years later, Door Peninsula Winery honors Hallow's legacy, conjuring up the distinctive autumn flavor of the region for a limited time. One sip and we're sure you'll all agree, quote, it's so good. It's scary.
So how do you heat it? Do you put it on the stove? Do you just toss it on the microwave?
Like, I'm going to microwave it. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to microwave it. But right. I think most mulled wines, like, you need to put it on the stove and kind of let it simmer for a while. But I've had this maybe 5 years ago and I loved it. And I just had microwaved it and it was great. So given the fall weather and almost Halloween weekend.
Perfect.
We have it. So,
did
y'all hear that?
I wanted to be like quiet so we heard that. I think that's one of your favorites, isn't it, Mom?
Yeah.
You've had it too?
Yeah.
What is just like a cozy cuddle up and easy little light, almost like a, not that it tastes like cider, but you just feel like it's, a cozy up warm light thing, not that you're committing to a full-on heavy red mulled something. I don't know.
How do you heat it, Mom, or do you?
In the microwave.
Yeah, let's be honest, we're not
way out
1665 over a fire. Yeah.
All right, so I have Lakeside Vacation Ale. So last weekend was kind of a last taste of summer with the warmer weather that we had. So it seemed a very refreshing and kind of like a summer beer for the last one of the year, if you will, as we move into fall. So it's from Point Brewing Company, which is in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and it's 5% ABV. It's considered a refreshing pale wheat ale. And on the bottle, it says, it starts in the trees. The warm sunset spills across the lake in a dance of hazy oranges and deep blues. Ah, Lakeside. A refreshing pale wheat ale balanced with subtle hints of orange peel. Take your vacation with you. So that's what I have for my beverage.
I might actually like that. Maybe I would give that a try because I do not like pale ales. Like, I'm not a pale ale, but I love wheat.
Yeah.
Like, wheat is my go-to, and with the orange, the wheat, I may actually not really happy. That might be something I would really like. It sounds really good.
I actually got it partly because I figured Sean would drink it because he likes the wheat beer and he also likes fruit beers also. Yeah. And that's something that I really enjoy is that citrus hint to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that just makes it more summery to me. So yeah, that was the first time I've seen that one at the store. So I managed to pick that one up. So I'll try it.
I'll let you know if I pick it up and what I think. Yep. Good recommendation for me on that one.
Mm-hmm. And then I mowed down while we were small talking before we started recording, but I had some cheese and some garlic summer sausage. So I specifically had some Gouda and some aged cheddar, but all the cheeses and all the sausage that I have are actually compliments from my team at work for Boss's Day.
Wow, that's
nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep. So it was
thoughtful.
Is organized by one of my inspectors, Sharon. So shout out to Sharon because she listens to the podcast and knows how much I love cheese. So she kind of organized it with everybody, which is a lot of people.
Sharon got you the perfect gift.
That's why I think she wanted to organize it because she listens to the podcast and she knows.
Right. She knew.
Yep. She knows I like cheese. She knows it's got to be Wisconsin.
Well, the BCM, yeah.
Yep. So it's she ordered it online and it's from Gardner's Wisconsin Cheese and Sausage out of Loyal, Wisconsin. So it's actually kind of cool. They got mostly online ordering and then they ship it to you with like the cold packs and everything so that it's stays fresh. You can order different like packages, like pre-packed stuff online. So it's really cool. So I had like 8 different cheeses and this garlic summer sausage and some teriyaki beef sticks. And the garlic summer sausage is like amazing. And all the cheese that I've tried so far has been really delicious. And they have some unique stuff. They had squeaky fresh cheese curds and they squeaked. Okay. They were that fresh and they were so good. And then
way to go, Wisconsin. Yeah. I know it.
The only reason I knew that about the squeakies was because of Julie, my friend who grew up on the farm up in Clintonville and never knew about cheese curds should squeak. That means they're fresh.
Yep. And then two of the more unique cheeses that I had, well, I had buffalo cheese, which I haven't tried yet. But it had like a bacon and an Italian. So very different and unique, but still good. So definitely
good.
Recommend it. And like I said, I was mowing down before we started recording. So
did you say Loyal, Wisconsin?
Yes, Loyal.
Did you look Wisconsin. Up where that is? Because I have never heard of it.
Oh my gosh. I was just going to ask that. Was it Loyal or Royal? But it's Loyal. Yeah.
I had thought of it when I wrote it down, but then I didn't actually look it up. It's 3.5 hours away. It is actually not that far from Stevens Point. So it looks like it's about in the middle of halfway between Stevens Point and Eau Claire out towards the northwestern Wisconsin. So
you did good with your point beer and
I guess
to point cheese.
Completely unintentionally, but...
Oh, stop. I can't believe it.
I really didn't look it up until now.
Wow.
But yeah, so it works out. All right. So before I get into today's Wisco fact and case, I was going through my news feed earlier today and a news story caught my eye. It just got published today. And I, of course, have to share it because it is an update related to a case that we covered on the podcast about Brittany Zimmerman.
Oh,
Mm-hmm. Okay, so headline to this story. I'm reading this off of WISN Milwaukee. It's MSN.com, but it's from WISN Milwaukee is the news source for this.
And can you just refresh our memory? I mean, I know we've done a lot, but yeah. Which one?
This was a murder that occurred on the UW-Madison campus back in 2008.
Okay. That's the one I thought. Who was engaged? And
Yep. Okay. And
That's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure.
Mm-hmm, and it was unsolved for many years, and then they had a DNA hit, and when we did cover the case, the trial had yet to occur. So this update is post that. So the title of this article is "Man Charged with Killing UW Law Student in 2008 Pleads Guilty." Don't remember her being a law student, but maybe. Okay,
yeah, so I don't remember her being a law student either.
Says a man charged with killing a University of Wisconsin-Madison student in 2008 pleaded guilty to first-degree intentional homicide on Thursday, so today, and his attorney revealed previously unknown details about the murder in a neighborhood close to campus. David Call was charged more than 2 years ago with killing Brittany Zimmerman. His trial was set to begin in January. Dane County Circuit Judge Chris Taylor sentenced Call to the mandatory life in prison sentence, the Wisconsin State Journal reported. Call's attorney, Ben Gonring, said that after a series of meetings with his attorneys and a lot of soul searching from David, he let go of a secret that he had been keeping for 14 years.
Wow.
Gonring said that Call was going door to door in Zimmerman's neighborhood running a scam to collect money to repair a non-existent flat tire. He was really collecting money for crack cocaine and was already high when he went to Zimmerman's apartment, Gonring said.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Right.
He stepped into the bathroom for a moment, and when he came out, Zimmerman was on the phone. He basically lost it, for lack of a better phrase, Gonring said. He was in the throes of a lot of drug usage and was paranoid and had not been out of prison for all that long, was very worried about what was happening on the other end of that line, and then proceeded to do acts which absolutely fit the criteria of first-degree intentional homicide.
I'm so glad that he pled to it.
Yeah, he certainly didn't go there with the intent to kill anybody or even harm anybody, Gonring said. And she was kind. The evidence has always been clear that she was a kind-hearted person and was that day. Gonring did not describe what Call did, but court documents state that Zimmerman, 21, died from stab wounds and strangulation. A judge will decide whether he'll be eligible for extended supervision at a later date. So he has officially pled guilty and will be sentenced for his crime.
Good.
So very good. And I'm glad that you found this amidst the more, if I want to say, popular outcome.
Recent trial.
With the, Daryl. No, I don't even want to say his name. Yeah. The loser who did the Waukesha Christmas parade. So I'm glad that you were able to find this amidst all of that.
Today. So I wanted to make sure that I shared that with you guys and also with all of our listeners, since we did cover that case. So it's
really good news. It's good news. It's closure for the family, which is always needed, and her friends, you know, not just family. Well, but everyone that knew her, that's what everybody needs.
Sounds like too, it will save her family from having to sit through a trial. So by him pleading guilty, you know, taking a responsibility for his actions, provides closure to the family, provides justice, and keeps them from having to continue to suffer through it.
And but it saves taxpayers' dollars too.
Oh, totally.
We get to pay
easier on the family. Not a waste of resources.
Yep. So, and it's kind of fitting as today, the case that I'm covering does have connection to Madison as well. So today's case bears some eerie similarities to the case we just covered on Angela Drake. And one of those items, that similarities, is that it takes place in Dane County with connections to Madison and Fitchburg. So here's some facts about the Wisconsin Capitol building, which resides in Madison, Wisconsin, and which we cited in the case on Brittany Zimmerman because she didn't live terribly far away. So, about our Capitol building, the current Capitol building is actually the third Capitol building to have been built for Wisconsin. Construction on the building began in 1906 and was completed in 1917, so it took 11 years to build. The architect was George B. Post and Sons from New York. It cost roughly $7.25 million. And if that was back in 1917 money, that's quite a bit.
Seriously.
And it was built with 43 types of stone from 6 countries and 8 states. The exterior stone is Bethel White granite from Vermont, and that makes the exterior dome the largest granite dome in the world. Wow. The Capitol is 284 feet and 5 inches tall from the ground floor to the top of the Wisconsin statue on the dome, and a 1990 law, or state law, I should say, prevents any building within 1 mile of the Capitol from being taller than the base of the column surrounding the supporting and supporting its dome. So they want to make sure that the Capitol is the tallest building.
Yep. I did know that. I didn't know it was that recent, though, that it was.
And the building itself was designated a National Historic Landmark in 2001. So it's been a long time since I've been there, but I have been to the Capitol. It's actually really neat to walk around.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful building.
And even just like the area around the building, I think there's like a, it might be a farming museum or an agricultural museum, but there's like a museum near there. Obviously, tons of stores and restaurants and things. And there's the old fashioned. I've not been there, but I imagine Sean and I will make it there one day, seeing as his go-to beverage is an old fashioned.
Yeah. Is that a bar or a restaurant?
It's
both.
It's yeah. Okay.
And they've got the best cheese curds and like an old fashioned, any kind of old fashioned,
or deep fried.
Deep fried. And then like any kind of old fashioned, one of my friends ordered a gin old fashioned when we were there. And I, number one, do not like gin, but I thought, all right, I'll try it. Even though that sounds nasty.
That just seems wrong.
It was delicious. I was shocked.
I'll have to recommend that to Sean because he likes old fashions and he also likes gin.
Yeah, there is quite a menu, delicious drinks. Yeah. Definitely a good go-to spot.
Sean is very much an old man when it comes to his cocktails.
So. Sean's an old man when it comes to his music, too.
I know.
And his radio stations.
Yeah. That he is. I mean, he used to listen to some popular music in addition to the oldies, but now I think he's just given up the popular music to CNN.
Oh, really? He's a news guy?
He'll listen to like CNN.
Like, wait, for radio listening?
Yes. We have Sirius XM. So he does have the oldies. He still has the oldies, but he will listen to like CNN and like listen to like the stock market stuff. And I'm just like, okay.
That is not relaxing.
Not my thing. Mm-hmm.
He's like really into that kind of stuff. I mean, more power to him because I am not. But it's good for him with his investments. So I don't know.
I guess for me to say that's not relaxing, but yet I can listen to true crime podcasts.
Oh,
and I know, right? Like, Peter Coyote just lulls me to sleep with
that. And that's where he's just like, how can you listen to this stuff?
I know. It's so, not, what's the opposite? Not anticlimactic. It's so,
I don't know what we're dealing with.
People. Well, they like, we listen to true crime to fall asleep, like that oxymoron. Oh. I don't know. Is that it?
Yeah. I don't listen to it to fall asleep, but I listen to it like during.
Yeah, Kayla stayed with me this weekend, and she said, "Well, I'm gonna go to the bed and watch Netflix Dahmer."
And I'm like, "Oh my god!"
Oh, to fall asleep too? Yeah,
I know.
I mean,
I love investigation discovery, and I love watching those types of shows. And sometimes it's late at night that the kids. I mean, it's only after the kids are in bed that we can actually watch it. But Sean's usually passed out by 10, and I'm like, I tried it once upon a time. I cannot watch that with him asleep and being the only one awake at 10 o'clock at night. I can't do it. I can't.
Oh yeah, I fall asleep to either. I'm gonna sound like a complete psycho. To Snapped, Forensic Files, 48 Hours on ID, or Dateline on ID. Those are kind of like my four go-tos to fall asleep because the people's voices are very calming.
Oh sure, yeah.
My go-to is Forensic Files, but not the Forensic Files 2.
Yeah, no, the original.
Yeah, it has to be the first guy. Yeah.
Fun fact, so Forensic Files just started airing on Investigation Discovery as well. So it always used to be on the home
life. HLN. Yeah.
HLN News.
HLN, Headline News.
Lifestyle Network or something like that. Anyway. But yeah, so now they just started playing it on Investigation Discovery as well.
Good to know. Okay. And I think because I'm looking at my Halloween and Dina just talked about the Dahmer. Mm. I saw on the news today that apparently there was a Jeffrey Dahmer costume that you could go buy, like a package.
Oh.
Now to me, that's when you would piece together. You would buy the crate, like the old school glasses. You would get
A
Goodwill t-shirt, right?
I recommend it, but
it was banned from, I don't remember what website, but like, because it was against the policy for like not promoting violence and whatnot.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I thought that was pretty solid.
But yeah.
Who would actually go buy, I'm sorry, maybe I'm being judgmental, but who would pay money to buy a complete Jeffrey Dahmer costume. Yeah. Now, if I would see someone wearing like a homemade one, I could appreciate that.
I don't know. No? I still think that's been pretty bad too.
I
wouldn't do it, or I wouldn't have anyone I know do it, but I would be like, wow, I see who you are.
Especially because I live in Milwaukee. Like,
I would
be like, seriously, that's just in bad taste, dude.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Not the kind of attention you want to get. I don't know. That's a tricky one because you're going to have different types of people that would do that. There's those that are just true crime junkies. And that's completely.
Right. And that's, I guess, where I kind of.
And then there's going to be those that are. Like
offended
fans of serial killers and not
well,
kind of people you want to be associated with. I mean, it's just like those people that are like the women that go crazy over serial killers on trial and like want to marry them. Like I don't get that. That to me says you need to go get your mental health evaluated, but not to
look at all the families right now of the victims of Dahmer, though, with the show coming out on Netflix. Like, it's just dredging up all of this.
And it's not the first time.
Again, it would not be the right time or the right city or state to do that. Like, somebody in California, maybe. But
yeah,
I think in Wisconsin, that's just...
Yeah, that would be a no-go.
It's too close to home. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think too is like, and I mean, that's the sad thing for this family is it's such a sensational story that this is not the first show that's been made on it. It's not the first movie that's been made on it. It's just another one in the long series.
Yeah.
Of things that have been made on it. And it's like so much attention put on Jeffrey Dahmer himself.
And, rather than the victims.
Yeah.
So I just rewatched Dahmer on Dahmer today because I had Kemper on Kemper on. Kemper on Kemper was on TV when I was watching. I don't know. I'm sure you know.
Mindhunter.
Yes, Kemper. Exactly. So that was on, and then Dahmer on Dahmer was on after that. That's my television while I'm working. That's what's on in the background. Educational yeah. serial killer movies shows.
I am like so disappointed that they haven't come out with a season 3 Mindhunter.
Yes. Such a good show.
It was amazing. But anyway. All right. So that was a bit all over the place. But to get us back on track, who's ready for the case?
I am.
Alrighty, here we go. On the night of June 22nd, 2007, 22-year-old Kelly Nolan was hanging out with some friends on State Street in downtown Madison, Wisconsin. And if you know Madison at all, as most of us do, then you know that State Street is the place to be. If that's your thing. Not everybody has a thing, but if you're going to be going out drinking with some friends at the bar, hanging out in the middle of summer, it's State Street is where you want to go.
Yep.
Life hadn't been particularly easy for Kelly of late. Her father had died the year before, and her stepmother had also passed away that May, so a month before. And whether due to the losses she suffered or other demons, Kelly had a few run-ins with the law due to drunk driving. So this, she's only 22 and she's already had some occurrences of drunk driving. But Kelly had been working hard to pull herself out of the darkness and to get her life back on track. She was set to graduate from UW-Whitewater in the fall, perhaps a little bit behind schedule, but she was going to do it. And for now, it was summertime, school was out, and Kelly wanted to be in Madison and possibly a little closer to home as she grew up in Wanakee, Wisconsin, which is located about 15 miles north of Madison. So she was going to school in Whitewater.
It's the only Wanakee in the world, by the way.
So, yeah. So
how do you know that?
It's literally on the sign in Wanakee.
Really?
Yeah. When you go into Wanakee.
Oh, I've never been there.
I feel like there's
only Wanakee in the world.
There's a number.
The only Wanakee in the world.
Now I'm going to start my own city and I'm going to call it Wanakee. Just like I'm going to have a bike paths on Mars.
Oh my gosh. So just a quick recap, so in case there's any confusion. So she was going to school in Whitewater. She wasn't actually a student of Madison, but for the summer period, she wanted to be in Madison. So she'd actually rented an efficiency apartment in Madison, probably a sublet for somebody who was a student in Madison and went back home for the summer.
Yeah.
And was in the process of finding a part-time job to be able to kind of cover the expenses. So it's just fun summer, last summer before she finishes her final semester at school and graduates. So why not go to Madison and have some fun? So Friday night was a chance to take a break from adulting, a chance to hang out with friends and forget about the tough blows life had recently dealt and the hard work of getting back on track. You know, so pulling your life together, it can't be easy having to face those hard realities when you're still so young. You know, she just wanted to be able to take a break and let loose with some friends. So the friends had a good time hanging out until around 11:30 p.m. And that was when Kelly's friends decided that they were done for the night and wanted to head home. social.
Wait, how old are these people?
Right, 22, and you're going home at 11:30.
Are they my age?
They might have jobs. You don't know. I mean,
gosh, when we're 23, we could, so 22, 23, we could still stay out till bar time and go to your job at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Maybe they had boyfriends and they wanted to get back for some private time. Who knows?
They just aren't Gen Xers. They're not.
Ooh la la.
Just saying, there's more than just going to the bars. But anyway, so her friends were like, kind of had enough time out at the bars and wanted to head home. But social, free-spirited, and laid-back Kelly wasn't ready to call it a night just yet. And so she said goodnight to her friends, but opted to stay downtown a while longer by herself. And she had done it before. It was not an uncommon thing for her to do. So neither Kelly or her friends were particularly concerned about her staying out by herself and her being left on her own.
Yeah, you're going to go to bars, you're going to see people, you know, it's mm-hmm. going to be other people your age.
Yep. Makes and I mean, sense. It's a fairly populous area. There's probably plenty of people mm-hmm. out. So Kelly briefly spoke on the phone with her sister, April, sometime after midnight. She ended up staying out until closing time around 2 a.m.
All right. That's what I'm talking about at that age.
Yeah, so Kelly is right there with you, Joe. Okay, so she had ended her evening at the Lava Lounge.
Ooh.
But closing time was pretty universal in around all the different establishments in the area. And so when she left at closing time at 2 a.m., the streets were beginning to get flooded with all the other people leaving at closing time on State Street. Kelly was not surprisingly a little bit intoxicated, but to what degree is difficult to say. With her summer apartment rental, she didn't have to worry about driving, so her past history with drunk driving would not be a factor or an issue for this night. At some point, one of the other individuals wandering home that she bumped into was an acquaintance of hers named Andrew, last name unknown, who was an employee at Amy's Cafe. Andrew offered to walk Kelly the 3 blocks home to her apartment. So she was actually quite close to where they were. And according to Andrew, on their way home, he and Kelly ran into another acquaintance of Kelly's, someone that he personally did not know. Andrew didn't catch his name, but the mystery man offered to take Kelly the rest of the way home to her apartment. So Andrew parted ways with Kelly, believing her to be in safe hands. But Kelly didn't make it home.
Ugh, or Andrew at that point.
Yeah. So somewhere.
Unless it was a lie.
Well, we'll
true.
Yeah, we'll find out.
We'll find out. Somewhere in the 3 blocks between the Lava Lounge and her apartment, Kelly disappeared into the night. And so Kayla would get this if she were on with us tonight. But I said this is the part where I can't help but think of the movie Promising Young Woman. So what she, if you haven't seen it, just at a high level without trying to ruin the movie, it's amazing, by the way. If you haven't seen it, totally recommend it. It's just awesome. But anyway, she kind of is on a mission after a traumatic experience that she kind of went through with a friend of hers back in her college days. And she goes to bars and she pretends to be intoxicated. And like a nice guy, quote unquote, will like offer to take her home. And then they like almost, she like traps them into them mm-hmm. then being not so nice guys. And then she completely flips the script by not actually being drunk and kind of calling them out on it.
Yeah, I just looked it up. It's on HBO Max. I did watch that.
It's good. It's good. Mm-hmm. And it's the end. It's like, not what you're expecting, I just remember like holding my breath with my hand over my hand, like mouth, just like watching the ending and everything like that. But I don't want to ruin it for anyone. But yeah, it's a good movie. I feel like it's empowering for women, but also kind of cautionary as well. But it's good. So I recommend it. But yeah, so like the idea of her being somewhat intoxicated and having like an acquaintance that you would consider to be like a nice guy offer to walk her home, or even two nice guys in this case. And then her disappearing in the night, it just kind of made me think of Promising Young Woman. And, you know, you don't know if somebody could seem like a perfectly nice guy and then just not be.
Yeah. Try to take advantage. Turns into a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like we said, the serial killer isn't scary. You know, he's usually cute and friendly and nice. It's not some mean old bastard like you would think.
Yeah. Right. Not always, anyway. Sometimes they are. But
right.
But, so while Kelly may have been a free-spirited and laid-back individual, it wasn't like her to just disappear. According to Kelly's sister, she is very conscientious. She would know that she would have hundreds of people worrying and wondering. 2 days after Kelly is believed to have disappeared, when news of her disappearance was broadcasted, Andrew, the man who had initially started to walk Kelly home that night, called the police to share his story and provide any information that he could on the last time he had seen her. So he like had no idea that after he passed her off to this other person that she had gone missing. And so when he saw that news, it like freaked him out, and he, you know, that's when you start kicking yourself. And so he did the right thing, and he called the police immediately to say, hey, I saw her that night. I initially was going to walk her home, and then we ran into this dude. So the investigators handled Kelly's case like any other missing person case, following leads called into the tip line and reviewing surveillance tapes from establishment to hunt for clues about where Kelly may be. Obviously, Andrew calling and sharing his information was a big lead for them at the time. One of the places identified as somewhere Kelly may have visited Friday night was State Street Brats, a popular bar downtown. Obviously, she hit more than one area or more than one location. Officers also walked along the shorelines and conducted cursory dives in Lake Mendota, one of two lakes that surrounded the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. So, you know, if she did end up by herself and she was intoxicated, could she have fallen into the lake and had an accident? You know, you just don't know. So, you know, just like they do for any missing person, they do those types of searches as well. Missing person flyers of Kelly were plastered around campus, around Madison and around the campus. People from surrounding cities reached out to see how they could help. So it got very good press in the surrounding community. Local businesses volunteered to produce missing person flyers for free. So they were doing everything that they could to get the word out. Kelly's sisters, April, as well as three others, created Facebook groups dedicated to finding Kelly and were able to come up with a $10,000 reward that they offered leading for information or leading to her return.
Wow, that's great.
Mm-hmm. And then candlelight vigils and prayer services were also organized for her as well. So the response and support from the surrounding community was overwhelming, but Kelly remained missing. So I would also say that the information that they got from Andrew, so, you know, there was the question of, was he lying? Wasn't he lying? So obviously he voluntarily called into the police as soon as he saw the news, and investigators did believe his story. So they essentially ruled him out as a suspect. So I think at that point, then their focus was on the person or the mystery man that she was handed off to, but they didn't, you know, narrow their focus just based on that. They were searching for her everywhere in case something could have happened to her of her, you know, on her own. But she was still missing. On July 9th, 2007, so 17 days after Kelly's disappearance, investigators followed pings from Kelly's cell phone to a town 10 miles south of Madison in the town of Dunn, Wisconsin. So 10 miles may not seem like a whole lot, but she didn't have a car, so she didn't get there on her own. Also kind of interesting that her phone was still active.
Yeah,
we're still able to be providing pings that much time later. So while perhaps not as good as it is today, the technology at the time helped investigators pinpoint the search area. The search focused on a 3-square-mile area around Fitchburg that included part of the neighboring village of Oregon just off U.S. Highway 14. So this is where it starts to get a little spooky when you're talking about Fitchburg and Oregon and you're flashing back to a year and a half before when Angela Drake went missing. Investigators were ultimately led to a heavily wooded private property owned by an elderly woman. The property, though dense, was dotted with homes. And it was there about 25 feet from the road that the body of a young woman believed to be that of Kelly Nolan was discovered. Dane County Coroner John Stanley tentatively identified the body as that of 22-year-old Kelly Nolan, and Madison Police Chief Noble Ray said the case had changed from a missing persons investigation into a homicide probe. Formal identification of the body as Kelly didn't come until the following Tuesday or Wednesday. At the time of the tentative identification, Stanley said investigators had yet to get a detailed up-close look at the body due to its location. So it was covered up in a very densely wooded area, but there was at least preliminary evidence that suggested that it was Nolan. So it was strong enough evidence that they were able to make the tentative identification, but they were very slow going in getting to the actual body. Police spokesman Joel Despain declined to describe the condition of the body, but said it was obvious to detectives that the person had been slain. So it's pretty clear from the start that there was foul play involved and that she was not there of her own volition and that somebody had done something to her. Based on the scene, it was also believed that the murder had occurred in the woods and not at a separate location. So they didn't view that as a body dump. So whatever happened to her happened there. Investigators took their time searching the scene for evidence and in getting to the body itself. The wooded area and subsequent cover where the body was found was very thick. The area itself was also very large. And they describe the death scene as complex. Time and care was taken by the slow-moving investigators to ensure that evidence wasn't inadvertently stepped on or compromised. So it may have taken a bit more time, but it's good that they didn't just trample the scene and potentially compromise any evidence that could be used to catch the killer.
Sadly, these cops in Madison are getting a lot more experienced with that because it's something that's happening a lot more often in Madison than it used to.
Yeah.
You know, they've definitely learned how to deal with the crime scene, and I mean, good and bad. That it's happening that much more often.
Yeah, and I wasn't even thinking about it at the time. So kind of found this case at the same time that I found Angela Drake's. So that's why I kind of knew I wanted to do them back to back, because of the similarities. But I wasn't even thinking about it until I found that story on the updated story, or the update that I shared earlier on Brittany Zimmerman, that too occurred and very close to when this happened. And while Kelly was found elsewhere and believed to be killed elsewhere, she did essentially disappear from Madison, not far from where Brittany herself was murdered. So kind of scary when you think about that.
Yeah.
I was going to school there at the time for both of them. Although I was home, not at school when Kelly disappeared. So
yeah, I was already gone. I left Madison in 96.
As it happened, the area in which Kelly's body was eventually found had been searched by investigators before, but to a lesser degree. So the final search was far more extensive. More than 100 officers from several agencies and volunteers were involved in the effort. And this time around, they also used, I'm assuming, cadaver dogs who were trained to track Kelly's scent. They may not have been cadaver dogs, but they were scent hounds, if you will, that could track her scent to try and find her. So I think at this point, they may have still had some hope that she would be found alive, in that they took the tack of trying to find her scent versus just a cadaver dog from that standpoint. But it says something too about just how dense this wooded area was, that they had actually searched in there at least to a lesser degree before and they didn't find anything.
Yeah.
At the time, it was virtually impossible for locals to miss the similarities to the tragic homicide of Angela Drake, which had occurred in roughly the same area just a year and a half before. A Fox News article at the time lent voice to this comparison, stating, "Nolan's disappearance evoked memories of another woman, Angela Drake, who disappeared after going home with a man she met in a Fitchburg bar in 2005. Her body was found frozen in a culvert. Michael DeSalvo, the man Drake left with, is serving 25 years in prison for her death. Monday's news conferences were held in the basement of Holy Mother of Consolation Church in Oregon, where Drake's family attends Mass. Pastor Bill Connell said the Drakes were in church Sunday praying for the Nolan family. 'We went through this 2 years ago with Angela Drake's murder,' said Connell, who performed Drake's funeral. 'It's a tragic experience. There's no explanation for it, but when the community gathers around, that's a sign they're giving support at a critical time.'" So, I mean, that's just how close these were to each other, that her family, Angela's family, were then in a position to be praying for Kelly Nolan and her family.
Yeah. And both of them in, you know, suburban communities too.
Yeah. So with the case changed from a missing person to a homicide, investigators were now on the hunt for a killer. Andrew, the cafe worker who had initially planned to walk Kelly home and who came forward to police, was believed by investigators to be a witness and not a person of interest. Andrew assisted police in developing a sketch of the mystery man who they had bumped into, who had said he would complete the job of getting Kelly home. The sketch, which was never released widely, but which had been shown around to bar workers when they were canvassing the area for information on Kelly's last movements, was rumored to be a fairly simple sketch of a man with round glasses and a goatee. And it may not have been released because it was too
general, like,
not descriptive enough. And I mean, who knows what state Andrew was in, if he was somewhat intoxicated. He certainly probably wasn't paying much attention to what this guy looked like. Because it's like anytime, you don't know that information is going to be important until it is.
Right.
Despite the best investigative efforts, the crime continues to remain unsolved 15 years later.
No, 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 Erica, you know,
that's
my rule. I cannot go with unsolved crimes.
It's still unsolved, unfortunately. But if anything that we can learn from the story about Brittany Zimmerman is that there is still hope, even many years later, it can still happen. There can still be justice. There's advances in DNA. You know, there's various information they can kind of theorize based upon where her body was found, you know, that whoever had done it had to have been familiar with the area, had to have a vehicle to allow for the transportation, but also too, just continuing to get the word out there. You know, people may have seen something, heard something, know something, and they just don't know it. So it's always good to get that out there. So Madison police have interviewed hundreds of people, and Kelly's family has looked for answers tirelessly. Despite that, MPD says right now no one is considered a person of interest or a suspect. So unfortunately, right now they don't have leads or anyone that they're looking at. But that doesn't mean they're not still getting information. It's not that they don't still have people assigned to it. They're still just waiting for information to come in, something to break. They're waiting for something to break. Kelly's sister April, now married with a daughter of her own, said that while she wants to ensure that her sister's memory remains alive, that she isn't forgotten, her focus is something else: justice. Most importantly, it would be justice for Kelly, she said. I know she would want us, everybody right now, just to be happy, but I know she would want justice for what was done. This is the part where I say, if anyone may have information about the disappearance and murder of Kelly Nolan, please notify the police. If you were in the area of her last known whereabouts or where her body was located, you could have seen something that was important and just didn't realize it. At the time of her disappearance, Kelly was 5 feet, 6 inches tall. She weighed about 125 pounds and had shoulder length dark hair. So roughly average height, fit, you know, not overweight, not too skinny. She was good, healthy weight. She was wearing an emerald green scoop-necked blouse and blue jeans the night she went missing, and she was carrying a grayish-green handbag with many pockets. Her family has offered a $25,000 reward for information that leads to a conviction of Kelly's killer. So there's still a reward. It's a little bit higher now, but it, you know, if you need that incentive, but I would say just, who needs the money? Just do the right thing. And if you know something, say something. So the last thing I wish to share is a statement from Kelly's family and friends that came out at the 10-year anniversary of her death, and which I believe still rings true today. As we mark this, the 10-year anniversary of the murder of our beloved daughter, granddaughter, sister, niece, cousin, and friend, Kelly Nolan, we once again thank the good Lord for sending her to us, albeit for such a short time and with such a tragic ending. Thankfully, our short time together was filled with all of the wonders that made Kelly such a very special and unique human being. Her kindness, friendliness, humor, selflessness, loyalty, intelligence, inquisitiveness, and of course beauty, both inside and out, will always be remembered by the many who loved her. Today, Kelly's family and friends once again wish to implore the public to come forward with any information they may have about the persons responsible for extinguishing such a precious and shining young light. The passage of time in no way diminishes the heinousness of the crime, the guilt of the criminals, nor the need for accountability. We and the authorities believe there are people in this community and elsewhere reading this today who can shed light on what happened to Kelly if they will only reach out and tell someone. With that in mind, we ask you to please contact the Madison, Wisconsin Police Department with any information, no matter how small or insignificant you feel that piece of information may be. Please tell the police what you saw, what you know, what you heard, or what you believe happened to Kelly. Our family realizes that providing this kind of information now may not be easy for you, or that you may be embarrassed or even afraid. But we would ask you to be brave, to examine your consciences and do the right thing. If you choose, you may remain anonymous, but please provide the information in any way you are able or which makes you most comfortable, by phone, email, letter, or in person. But please provide it. We are gratified that the Madison Police Department has chosen to remain dedicated in its pursuit of the predators who committed this heinous or senseless act of violence against Kelly, and to preventing other innocent women from becoming victims. From the bottom of our hearts, we sincerely thank you, the family and friends of Kelly Nolan.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say, like, you can always call the Crime Stoppers line. You can call and remain anonymous. Just if there's anything that you know, if there's anything that you heard, even if you don't know if it's true or not, just let somebody know. Let them get the chance to investigate it. Doesn't matter if you've been holding on to it for a long time. Like, do something to help this family find out what happened.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's small details that don't even seem related that can completely break a case.
And honestly, it's usually those small details in a cold case that there's something so minor that leads to something really major. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I didn't see anything in what I read that talked about any kind of DNA. Not that there couldn't have been DNA found at the scene, but my guess too is that the time of year and the location of where she was found, probably there was some compromising of anything that might have been there. So, you know, that's the one thing that seems to be very popular these days when it comes to cold cases, is that you have some kind of DNA finding years later, whether it's through like genetic DNA, like I forget what they call that, like the ancestry DNA, where they're rebuilding the family trees and things like that. Yeah. Or there's also the DNA testing, if they have the sample from the perpetrator, that they can kind of see, get a better they can kind of get a better visual of what they might look like in terms of eye color, hair color, ethnicity, things like that, which is pretty incredible as well. But that's the thing that's really sad, is unless there is some kind of DNA, it makes it that much harder and much more important for anybody that might have information to come forward and share it. It really depends upon the community to bring it home.
Absolutely.
So one thing I thought I'd just put out there is, you know, obviously there were connections made at the time. There's a fair number of similarities between the Angela Drake case and this case. I mean, did anything stand out to you guys? Any thoughts on that?
Well, that they were both women that had been out at the bar that were not with their friends any longer and ending up like in the suburbs.
Yeah. One thing that I've seen, like, they'll have those news articles or something. It'll be like, oh, 10 rules to follow, or that you should know if you're a woman, or something like that, or things like that. And one that I've seen recently is more like, if you go out with your friends, like, the rule is you stay with your friends no matter what. You go out with them, you come home with them. You don't leave each other. And I feel like that was one thing, that both of these women went out with friends and at some point got separated from their friends. Not that they thought anything of it. They were comfortable in the area where they were and the locations that they were they felt safe being on their own. But anytime alcohol does get involved, it can impair your judgment. And sometimes you don't know if it's somebody that you haven't met before, you don't know that well, or even somebody you do know that well, you don't know what monster might be lurking behind that mask.
Sad but true.
Well, and I feel like it kind of goes back to Girl Scouts with the buddy system, yeah. Right? You're never alone. Like, you always have each other looking out for someone, for each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, growing up in Madison,
Who would think you needed that?
Had my friends leave or have left my friends.
Yeah.
And because it just wasn't something that ever happened.
Yeah.
And you're in a place where you know people. Like, we would generally go to the same bars. I don't know that I would ever have left anyone downtown, but I grew up on the east side and we always kind of went to the same area bars. And sure, we had all left. I mean, I listen to all of these and think, I've done all of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Fortunately, none of these terrible things happened to me.
Yep.
But, you know, these women are thinking the same way that I was when I was doing it, that it's just not a big deal. And unfortunately for them, some man, or I mean, in most cases, a man, ends up getting them and taking advantage of the situation. It's very scary because it could be anybody.
Yeah. All right. Are you guys ready for a high note?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So I've been trying my hardest to stick with the festival sort of theme. Not sure this necessarily constitutes as a festival so much as an event, but this is about the Luminary Walk. So this actually takes place in Wanakee, Wisconsin, which is where Kelly Nolan is from.
And the only Wanakee in the world.
See, now Jill knows. It's your fact today. Yes.
So it's presented by Camp Creatability. It takes place on November 20th, 2022. And it is located at Schumacher Farm Park. And it is from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Prices for adults are $15, $7 for 12 and under. And then there's like $35 for a family pack, and then 2 and under are free. So it says, take a luminary walk at Schumacher Farm Park in Wanakee to support Camp Creatability. Walk the glow stick lit trail and then warm up by the fire and make a s'more. So it sounds interesting. I looked at it as you're in nature, you're in wooded areas, kind of like where Kelly was found, but it's sort of taking back something that can be scary and making it enjoyable. Not that it's related at all to Kelly in that way, aside from the fact that it's where she's from, but it's making nature beautiful, even though some people can make it scary. And
it's a fundraiser for the farms too. Yes. So
yep, it's a fundraiser for to support Camp Creatability, which of course then I had to look up Camp Creatability. And so who is Camp Creatability? Camp Creatability is a training facility and full service studio for artists, visual effect artists, filmmakers, graphic designers, animators, and digital media designers with autism or other disabilities. We transform expectations through our mission of employability, independence, and inclusion. Our training facility provides opportunities for children, teens, and adults of all abilities to gain individualized instruction and eventually job placement in the arts and entertainment industry. Our studio provides individuals on the autism spectrum with technical, behavioral, and social skills required for employment. The production studio contracts for paid industry digital media projects that provide hands-on experience and eventually employment opportunities for our artists.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is.
And their mission statement, it says to provide children, teens, and adults with autism or other disabilities with individualized instruction and hands-on experience in the arts and entertainment field. So I'll include the link for it as well. But, you know, I think it's just kind of a sort of a beautiful event from two different perspectives. One is that it's for a good cause and supporting, you know, helping individuals with autism and other disabilities, which is great. And then also too, it has a very beautiful interaction with nature as well, and making places that sometimes I even have a hard time not thinking of as scary because of this type of case.
Yeah.
And these types of stories.
So that organization, is it just Wisconsin or is this a nationwide?
Oh, let's see. It's located in Wisconsin. So I believe that this is a Wisconsin based business. And actually their little symbol has the state of Wisconsin in it. So it
definitely has
to be a Wisconsin based one. Doesn't mean that they don't have similar similar groups elsewhere.
Okay.
But yeah.
Because when we were on our road trip and we were in Toledo, Ohio, and we went to visit the botanical gardens, there was this beautiful little boutique, I'll call it. And Brian, when we walked up to it and he was like, oh yeah, you're going to want to go in here, you know, like, cause it was artsy, beautiful, unique stuff outside, like colorful, drawing me in. And I go in and the woman behind the desk says, are you familiar with our establishment? And I said, no, we're on vacation. We just wandered by. Of course, I'm intrigued. Everything looks beautiful. She said, well, all of our artists are with disabilities. So granted, it wasn't necessarily autism, and then she said that everything sold goes, the proceeds return back to, like, basically go back to the artsy, not foundation, but like the people who sponsor the boutique. And so I bought a beautiful print from Jennifer and several glass blowing. They also did glass blowing.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yes. And I thought it was cool too, because then they do a little tag on the back of the artwork or attached to the glass blowing that says their name and what they enjoy doing. And I just love that.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really
very nice.
Makes it
and I'm sure to tell everyone, like when someone compliments, like, wow, those are beautiful. Wow, this is where I got it. And here's what it was. And
yeah,
you know what? Like, just, I couldn't paint this beautiful thing. So
that's awesome.
Yay. I love that there's a Wisconsin organization.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a nice little event, and then some information about, you know, a really wonderful organization in our state and with a really great mission. So that is what I had for today's episode. And then before I say goodbye to everybody and close it out, I did want to put in a little plug for the Love and Justice podcast, which just aired its first episode today. So it is a Wisconsin podcast that is dedicated to the unsolved crime of Ashley Love, and hopefully drawing some attention and garnering some leads,
and
yep,
to people who might know something can call the police. And what year was it, Erica, that it's been unsolved?
2009.
It's a long time. 2009, I think it's
okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just added it to my list. I saw that they had the trailer, the intro, and the episode that dropped today. So yeah. I will definitely listen.
It's very sad. I followed it as well. Yeah.
It is mind-boggling what happened, and it just makes no sense at all. And for it to still be unsolved is very, very sad. So I appreciate that. Her friend is out there doing the podcast and
advocating
more attention. Yeah.
Yep. And I don't know if the podcast touches on it, but because he has ties, obviously he knows Ashley and is from Wisconsin, but he is also a award winner.
Yeah, I think it said
an award winner, yeah.
I think he had an Emmy or something like
Emmy, that. Emmy, that's it. Okay. So he's out in LA or wherever. And he also did a short film. Yep. And it was called Letters to Ashley years ago. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's available online, but
I think you can actually.
People are interested, they can kind of check that out as well.
I think when I looked at it, I don't know if it's still available or not, but I think it might be on Amazon Prime. I think
the Letters to Ashley.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, good. I hope it is. I hope it is.
Yeah.
And again, it's short. I mean, it's
It's
not a movie or anything, but
yeah. So
trying to bring awareness, and he's trying to use his, I don't want to say platform, but you know. A friend being a friend, I think, trying to give a voice or give awareness.
Trying to leverage his following a little bit to reach a wider audience.
Try and help solve or give justice.
Find
his friend's murder, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for all you true crime listeners, it's obviously going to be a little bit more on the serious side than... like, not that ours isn't, but and a lot more in depth than our podcast, but it definitely is worth a listen. Again, it's the same concept of maybe you know something, and you just don't know it. So just listen in and share it with your friends, get them to listen in. The more people that it reaches, the more chance of new leads and information coming forward to hopefully lead to a resolution and justice in the murder of Ashley Love.
I did just look it up, and indeed it is on Prime. So Letters to Ashley, and Ashley is A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H, and can rent it for $1.99 or buy it for $4.99.
And does it say how long it is? I want to say it's like maybe an hour.
It's a short film.
Yeah. Okay.
23 minutes long.
Okay.
So not even half an hour.
Not nearly, right. Okay.
Yeah. It's a short documentary.
I was at the red carpet event for it.
Yeah.
At Marcus in Brookfield.
Yes. I remember when that was out, because I said something to my godmother.
All right. Well, that's all we had for you guys today. I think next episode we're gonna try for an Oh My Nerves. So we'll.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Time. I think
who's up for that? Is that Kayla?
That's
Kayla
everybody.
Oh, we're all doing it again. Okay.
Yeah. Oh My Nerves. Well, that's the Oh My Nerves versus the Wisco Crime Beat. I think we'll stick with the Oh My Nerves.
Oh My Nerves was the shorter ones. I'll have to start looking for some.
Yeah.
Something.
I've already
outrageous.
Been,
Oh My Nerves.
I've Stop. Already been. Tagging stuff for myself, but anyway, so alrighty, well, we're gonna call it a night and sign off for all our listeners. So until next time, eat, drink, and be wary. Thank you. you for listening to Beer, Cheese, and Murder. We would like to also thank the references that make this podcast possible. A full list of references can be found on our website at beercheeseandmurderpodcast.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at beercheeseandmurderpod, where pictures from today's episode are available for your viewing. If you would like to share your feedback, WISCO facts, case suggestions, stories, or just whatever, please email us at contact@beercheeseandmurderpodcast.com. Don't forget to tell your friends, but most importantly, until next time, eat, drink, and be wary.